watch if this girl that ran off, the runaway bride there, if she plays her cards right, she should say she had a dissociative experience and she couldn't help herself and she just went into a fugue state. That's what she should, that's the way she should pitch this, because you can? Were you having 600 people to your wedding? Well, but, you know, I don't know. I just think that she made it 10 times worse.
Yeah. What happened? I can understand.
She was supposed to be getting married on Saturday, and on Tuesday she disappeared, and they thought she was dead, and everybody went out hunting for her in the woods, and her parents gave a $100,000 reward to get her back. Then she's in Albuquerque, and she called, and she first said that she'd been kidnapped by a Hispanic male and a Caucasian woman who cut her hair and then threw her into the car. And so the police said, oh yeah, right, they took time to cut her hair and then throw her in the car. This can't, but they didn't hurt her. And so the poor girl, I mean, you know.
If she had other people, she probably could have afforded a wedding planner. She wouldn't have to deal with it.
It's a bit much. Okay, so if I were this girl, I would claim dissociative disorder due to overwhelming anxiety. So let's talk about why I would say that. Because dissociative disorder involves a disturbance in integration of your identity, your memory, and your perception or consciousness. So all these things get kind of split apart. And Peplau, you know, the mother of psychiatric nursing, says that in early life, certain thoughts, feelings, and actions are disapproved of by your significant others, and those standards get incorporated into you. And then if something surfaces in your life that stirs all that kind of stuff up, you get a severe anxiety response, which removes the feelings from your awareness, and then you dissociate. So what I'm saying is this girl perhaps had so many things going on in her life that she got so overwhelmingly anxious at 4+ that she dissociated from herself and ran off into the night. Harry Stack Sullivan, or the day, or whatever she ran off into. He says that dissociation is an anxiety-reducing mechanism that restricts awareness so that if you pull things up into awareness, you won't be able to make any connections. And if you remember, he had the good me, the bad me, and the not me. And the not me is this stuff that you cannot integrate into your ego. So that's the stuff that you split off, and that becomes what they call the dissociated motives of the self. So all of us have dissociated from one time to another. Some of you may be dissociated while you're sitting here right now because you're like, who cares about this? This is falderall. Or you're worried about your anxiety, so you dissociate. And we do this on a continuum from mild. Any of you ever get in the car, drive home, have no recollection of how you got home, but you open your, you kind of go, oh, and you're sitting in your driveway, and you're like, oh, I'm really dangerous because I have no idea how I got here. Or I know sometimes it happens to me, I get in the car to leave for work, and since I have different places that I work, sometimes I go to the wrong place because I'm not consciously thinking about where it is that I'm supposed to be going. So, did you do that?
Yes, I did.
Well, it happens. So, because you are dissociated off, spaced out, as it were, while you're driving or sitting in class. Oftentimes, I know when I'm taking a class, sometimes I'm gone. I don't know where I am. And when people get up to leave the classroom, I come back and I go, well, I completely missed out on that. Has that not happened to some of you? Yeah, it happens. So we all do it. But it gets us into trouble if we do it and run away to Albuquerque and so I don't, anyone here ever had an out of body experience? You think so or you don't think so? Well, if you had an actual conscious awakening out-of-body experience, you would be out of your body and you'd be looking at yourself. You would go, get a load of that. Now, the first time I ever heard about this was when I was about 22, and I saw a TV show on it, and I then expended probably the next 30 years trying to get out of my body because I thought it was the coolest thing that you could ever do. And, you know, there are all these techniques from Eastern meditation techniques where you come out through the crown chakra and you try to get out and you float around. But I was never particularly successful at it until I had my second child, when I found myself floating on the ceiling and looking down at a woman who was making these terrible noises and groaning and moaning. And I thought to myself, that person is really disgusting. And then I realized that it was myself, and I was out of my body, and I was looking at myself giving birth. So then the realization was, get a load of this. You've been trying all this time to get out of your body, and now here you are out, and it's not serving you any purpose because it's not a cosmic interlude. It's some kind of thing where the anxiety, I guess, of giving birth without medications was too much for me, so I had to get out of my body and let my body go through it. So the only other time it's ever happened to me was in a CAT scan machine, and you're laughing. You think I'm weird, right? Yeah, that's okay. I don't care. I'm fine with it. And I'm out floating around in the CAT scan machine. I'm like, wow, I'm out. This is so cool. And then the technician would go, please be still. And the body is completely still. So, but other people talk about these out-of-body experiences as near-death experiences. And if you've never had it, I recommend it thoroughly. But I still haven't figured out how you get out completely. The next level of that would be amnesia, where you just completely can't remember anything. And then the next thing would be fugue state. And the last and the most severe of all of them would be what used to be called multiple personality disorder, but is now called DID, dissociative identity disorder. Again, probably just write new books, but probably better to describe the etiology of this because you're dissociating. In a normal process of this, the sense of self is not lost, but as we move along on the continuum, when you're in a dissociative identity disorder, your self is actually disconnected from the experience, or the affect, or the thought is lost. And if you think of the Jason Bourne, the first one, the Jason Bourne movie, he actually is in a dissociative state. And he doesn't know who he is. He has amnesia, and he's also sort of fuguing because he's running around Europe trying to figure out who he is. And that, and it then is explained in the later part of the movie where he then realizes all these horrible things, and because it was so awful to him, the anxiety was so great that he just split off, became something other than who he is, and he has to try to regain himself. So that's the continuum, spacing out to dissociative identity disorder. So in the more extreme dissociations, you remove your sense of self from the experience and are then personally estranged. And if it works, you continue to do it whenever you get extreme levels of anxiety. I have had patients who have told me that as a child, when they were being abused, the only way that they could cope was to not be there, and that's how they described it. And so now, hey Barbie, qu'est-ce que c'est? What is that?
The Bristol.
Oh, the stool thing. We went to a, this weekend was the GI conference, and we went to a lecture on how to identify different stools, and we actually have this chart that you're supposed to take and show it to your patients who can point out whether they have small and shapely, round with jagged edges. And this GI guy spent about 15 minutes talking about the shape of your stool. We were losing it. We were cracking up, but it was very cool. We did not dissociate from that experience. So often the first time that this happens is in a childhood experience where the anxiety is extreme. So the only way you, the integrated personality, can deal or cope with the stress of the situation is to not be there. And somehow, because when you're a child, or even probably when you're an adult, it's not completely in your control, that which is the essence of you splits off from the experience and goes somewhere else. And then your body goes through the experience, but you, the self, are not aware of it. And so we think that, or I think that that is a very clever way to deal or to cope with child abuse and sexual abuse in particular. If you're not there, your body goes through it, but your mind goes somewhere else. And I've had some patients who describe it to me exactly that way, because it helps you to survive and escape what is obviously a horrid reality. And if the trauma persists, the dissociation will persist, and will sort of impact how you develop your personality. Have you all read Sybil? Well, if you haven't, go and read it over the summer, because now it will probably make better sense. What?
My mom called me that.
Your mother called you Sybil?
She called me that often.
Because? Because when you get cranky? Well, I think the poor problem with Sybil is her abuse was so horrendous and so multifaceted that she had to develop multiple forms of personality just to cope with the horror that her life was. Rabbit Howls is another one of these that talks about these kinds of things. And there's not that many people out there that have that extreme form of dissociation, but there's a lot of people that have sort of middling forms of it. We all know that child abuse then is always part of the dissociation continuum. So the traumatized, at the base of all of this, the traumatized person wants to deny the experience, which is usually prolonged. It usually makes them feel quite powerless, and their coping repertoire just isn't enough for them. And some of these things depend upon the initial age of the victim. The youngest sexual abuse victim I personally have ever seen was 6 months old. And the father, and it was the father, was taking the child out of the crib at night and having anal sex with his child. And so, the patient came into the hospital and had all kinds of rips and things like that, and the horror of it must be unspeakable, and I don't know what happened to that child down the road, but I would imagine if that happens to you at 6 months, you're just forming an ego, and I can't even imagine how that kid would have turned out down the road, because we got the child at 8 months and have been going on for several months up until that point in time. So never assume that everything is okay. Always sort of assume that there might be horrible things going on. So then, if it happens a little bit older, you would get a problem of integrating your memory, your perception, and your consciousness. And if you can't integrate the memory, you have what's called dissociated memory. If you can't integrate your identity, like who I am as a human being, then you get a fugue state or a dissociative identity disorder. Or if you just feel like you're disconnected, you feel depersonalized. And all of us have some degree of this depending upon what's going on. About 6% of the population may have this, and it's probably a higher amount, but we just don't have the stats on it because people don't talk about it. It's treatable, and it's not necessarily treatable with medications. It's more with intensive psychotherapy. Many of the theories of this are not proven. They're just that. They're just theories. I happen to like the Sullivanian idea of good me, bad me, not me, and so I dissociate those pieces out of myself that are not me, and I don't identify with them, but nobody can prove that. No, I'm not. This isn't post-traumatic stress. This is dissociating out pieces of yourself. You either lose intact with your memory, so it's not like you're necessarily getting flashbacks. There could be, when you start to remember it, when you start to reintegrate, there could be some post-traumatic stress, but this is before you're ever reintegrated. In post-traumatic stress, you're still an intact entity, and you remember those horrific things that you've seen. Here, let's say it's about sexual abuse. It was so awful that I don't even remember the experience, and I've dissociated that, split that off. So I'm going along in my merry way, but I'm completely unaware of all that stuff over here because I can't deal with it. Now, it may surface in me. For example, people will say, or you'll read the literature that will say they smell a certain perfume, and then they completely freak out because maybe that was the cologne that the perpetrator was wearing, and that stirs that memory because everything is still stored inside your brain, but it's split off over here. Part of the therapy, and it's essentially therapy and it's long-term therapy, would be to find these pieces out here and put them back in. Now, once I start to get them back in, I'm going to be horrified, I'm going to be horrendously stressed from them, then I'm going to go through stress responses, and the response of the therapist would be to help me cope with that over periods of time. You probably, if you know someone that has this, you probably want to send them to someone who does this all the time because it's a specialty. I don't think your average therapist who had 60 credits at Rutgers is able to deal with this. Most of us know what we know about it from reading the same books that, you know, we're reading Sybil and that kind of stuff, and, you know, that's our understanding of it. Most of us have not met people that actually are multiple personalities or dissociative identities, although sometimes they show up in the psych unit and they'll tell you that they're that, but I don't know that I buy that. I know a couple of people that have had horrendous abuse stuff who are still fairly dissociated from everything going on in their life, and they don't talk about it. They keep it completely pressed down, so I don't know. The not-me experiences are those overwhelming, no comfort, no safety, those not experiences that are split off and completely out of any awareness. But they are powerful, and they work underneath the surface, and they give you anxiety disorders, they give you pain, they may cause you to use drugs and things of that sort. Oftentimes, we dissociate, particularly those abuse experiences, just to survive. I don't know if I've talked about this particular person, but she actually suicided a couple of years ago. I encountered her in her 30s. She had selected a husband who beat her, who often held her at gunpoint. She, as a child, probably 6 through 10, had been taken off with her. Her mother was sick and died. She was sexually abused by her father, who would then take her away with the other guys, with his guy friends for the weekend, and they would pass her around with a group of guys. And she, on the surface, was very controlled, was very meticulous. Everything had to be exactly right. And when things didn't go exactly her way, she would almost melt down. In therapy, she began to surface all that stuff, and I wonder to this day if that was a great idea, but she was certainly sort of getting to the point that she was non-functional. When you started to bring those memories back in and get her to look at them, then she became suicidal, being aware of all the horrible things that had happened to her, and she ultimately did kill herself. She actually was a nurse, and she went into the med room and shot herself up with potassium and killed herself right on the floor. So I wonder what service we did to this woman by helping her to reintegrate that stuff that she had dissociated off. She wasn't a multiple. She just had all that out of her awareness. But the stress of things began to stir things up. And why, in fact, would she pick such a husband? Because that was all she knew. She only knew things about being abused. So she would pick a husband that would do those same sort of things to her. Kind of a horror thing. Trauma seems to have a biological effect on the brain, and the memory gets processed, as we've been talking about repeatedly, in the limbic system, the hippocampus, and in the amygdala. So all that stuff gets stirred up when there is a similar experience or when the memories flash through the head. And so this can cause major issues going on down the road. If the trauma was early, the somatic complaint may be a memory laid down on primitive neurological paths that gets stirred up by smells or sights or sounds, which the child has no way of integrating. Think about this 6-month-old who's been sexually abused. They don't have words to describe those sorts of things, do they? I mean, maybe they do, but we certainly aren't aware of those kinds of things. So there might be just a look on someone's face that could set you off and stir up all that anxiety, which we would have no way of being able to track back to that experience. It's just there as a core experience in the child. So that, I guess, gets you to the point where you have to think about what are the meanings of these births and why would someone have that as an early experience and someone else have a perfectly normal experience. To me, that's fairly hard to integrate. Although there is some very good work being done with these people. John Upledger is a DO who has developed this line of body therapy called craniosacral therapy, where they just hold the body in different positions and, in theory, manipulate the meninges and change your cerebral spinal flow. But he has a technique called somato-emotional release, which is involved with some of these holdings. And then there are some little rocking movements that they do. And you can actually release some of the trauma in your body. And he's had some very good, he's got some published results. His center is in Boca in Florida, and he's got some pretty good results with some people with severe trauma. I know that I think I've talked about getting run over a couple of years ago I was run over by a car on a mountaintop in Spain, and I was essentially sort of crushed, and I had this sort of primitive surgery, and it was like a horror. My arm was disattached for probably about 8 months. It didn't grow back, and they put rods in over there that bent, and so I had an elbow here and an elbow here, and it was like this horrible thing. And I just sort of was like, la la, and, you know, sort of suppressing it, repressing it, doing all those things and continuing to go on about my life. And whenever I would get a massage, this weird stuff would happen, and my arm would start to go like that, and I thought I was possessed. I know, I'm really weird. But I had a few massages with this woman that did this SER kind of work, and my arm would flap around and would do all that kind of stuff. And I would say, what is the meaning of that? And she would merely say, you have trauma stored in there, and there is a memory in your body, and it is doing this unwinding, and a lot of you are going, yeah, right. But I'm telling you, my arm had a life of its own. It would flail around. It would do all these kind of things, and I would, like, go, woo, look at that. And apparently it's over because it doesn't happen anymore when I get that kind of work, and I have a lot better use of my right hand and everything like that. But whatever she was doing sort of unleashed that trauma in there. And so I'm kind of a believer because normally my arms don't flap around just sort of independently on their own. But it was very cool. It was like I was possessed, but just in that arm, it would sort of twirl around. Oh, the look's coming from you. So I have to tell you these things because, you know, sometime down the road, you're going to believe some of this, and you'll say, oh, yeah. So in the child is supposed to be learning about stable boundaries, and they're supposed to be learning about resilience. But if the family is incestuous, then they're not learning any of those sorts of things. And the dissociative behavior helps you to maintain reality during the trauma. Now, notice I've trimmed these things down considerably. There's other stuff on your slides. I'm trying to go fast. So Louise is 30, and she's in an intensive outpatient program after she was referred for constant self-mutilation. So she's a cutter and a stabber and a pincher. She has drug abuse and depression. She was abused by her father and his best friends from the ages of 8 to 15 when her father left the house. She often presents with arm scratches but never discusses any problems and always says she's just fine. The nurse confronts her on this and they begin to discuss what this pattern means. Louise tells her that she's been afraid that the nurse will not be able to handle any discussion of her anger. And you can imagine that if she can articulate her anger, she is now very, very, very angry and afraid she's going to explode and actually commit murder. Because if she's now pulled those feelings back into her, she's completely freaked out. So, and she's worried that she'll be dropped out of the group and hospitalized if she actually talks about that. So what do you think's happening with her? She's repressed. She's suppressed. She's got all this pain, all this stuff that is surfacing. We haven't talked about cutters yet, but cutters are actually, people will actually cut themselves or make injuries to themselves to feel the pain because they are so dissociated, they have so split off the personality from their body in order to cope with the horror that the only way they can feel real is to cut themselves. That's on Lifetime too. Well, you see that? These are real things that happen. I don't know if you go to the Barnes & Noble in Brick, but there's a cutter in there that in the summer she's got tattoos and she's got cuts all up and down her arms. And I sometimes go in there just to stare at her because I'm like, isn't anybody helping this poor girl? And I like to go over to the section and buy the books and put them on the table and say, have you read these? But I haven't done it yet because I'm trying to mind my own business. You've seen her in there? I mean, it's... But she's showing it off. She's desperate to me because otherwise she would cover it up. She's desperate for somebody to intervene on her, and she doesn't. And I keep thinking that somebody should intervene, but then I mind your own business. There's a million cutters out there. The first cutter I ever remember was a guy who I had to go in and start his IV, and I go into the room, and this is before piercings were big. This is a long time ago. And he had piercings all over his body. He had burns all over him, and I thought, oh, this is really something. And as I pierced his skin. He began to scream out, and he goes, "You're killing me, you're killing me." And I'm like, "I'm killing you? You're covered with burns. What are you talking about?" I wasn't being very therapeutic, but it's, so it's not just girls, although we think about it. This happens in most cultures, and it may be a culture-bound syndrome shaped by the particular culture. Some cultures talk about patients being in a trance. There's Navajo frenzy stuff. There's the running amok stuff that we talked about in the Western Pacific. Dissociation is an early primitive defense that works well for kids. It helps them to tolerate ambiguity and conflict. I don't know how many of you can remember your childhood, but you may have gone to fantasy places, have fantasy chums or playmates or things like that, and you may often not have been present. And your parents may have said, "Where are you? Earth to Leah, come back in. What are you doing?" Because you were, in fact, dissociated out of your regular realm of experience. We see that in the fantasy play and imaginary activities, and it's not pathological until you start doing it in adolescence. I remember a woman who worked on the psych unit in one of the local hospitals who had an imaginary fiancé, and she showed up one day with a ring and all this kind of stuff because she hadn't gotten rid of this primitive defense mechanism, and she maintained that she was getting married and all this kind of stuff. And the cruel people that worked with her called up her mother to say, "We want to plan a shower for your daughter. We understand that she's getting married." And the mother said, "My daughter hasn't had a date ever." And so she was still living. Shamika likes this. You know her? There's a lot of people like that out there. If the behavior persists... Really? So she's not, so she might be a factitious disorder, going for the presents, or she might be really screwed up. But it's not, it's called pseudocyesis when you think that you are pregnant, and there are actually people that come in. I don't know if you've ever transported anyone, but I've seen a couple of people in the emergency room who come in and they say, "I'm in labor," and they're not pregnant. There's no baby. So I don't know. It's the same kind of thing. Dissociation in childhood, staring off into a trance, odd motor behaviors, talking or acting out the internal conflicts. About a third of us have felt this, and especially as kids or as adolescents, and that's kind of a common thing. Adolescence, as you all know, is a rough time for kids, and you may start doing some of these behaviors as you get a little bit older. You'll also be very vulnerable to the peer group, so this girl may have, all of her friends may have babies, and she may feel that the only way she can belong is to, in fact, have a baby, but I'm not convinced that she's actually dissociating. Lots of switching when the environment... All right, so I guess I'm talking about switching here. So when you have these multiple personalities, which are probably multiple aspects of yourself, that, because all of us are different people at different times. You guys are different here in school than you are with your friends, than you are with your parents, than you are in any new situation. And most of us would not say that we are different or that we have an alter. We would just say that I'm quiet in some places and I'm happy in other places and those sorts of things. But here, under these circumstances, the person sees themselves as completely different, having completely different personalities, sometimes talking in different ways, sometimes really acting in different ways. Again, pretty much what we all do sort of normally, but much more extreme. And so they call it switching when you go from personality to personality, when you switch back and forth between alters if you really have an extreme dissociative aspect of things. In order for us to make contact with these people and help them to get better, we have to first establish a trusting relationship with them, and that's why I'm suggesting that the average therapist shouldn't be dealing with that. Adults, by the time we get to be an adult, we should have integrated our good me, bad me, and not me, and we should be able to say, "I'm weird about this, I have problems in this area, I feel really strong about myself in another area, and we should be able to really look at ourselves almost from without and say, this is who I am. But any horror, any awful experience could evoke dissociation if that is a tendency that worked for us in the past. So that's why I'm saying this girl from Georgia ought to use that. She should say that she dissociated. She's not sure how she got on the bus. She's not sure exactly what happened. When she came to her senses and turned on the TV and realized that everyone was looking for her, this is what I would do for my defense. I would say, I suddenly was jolted back into my awareness and said, oh my God, where am I? Here I am in Albuquerque. And that's when I made the phone call. But I was so embarrassed that I had to make up a story in the beginning because I couldn't explain how I got out there. And if in fact it was a dissociative experience, that would be what she would say. Do you think that that's what happened with her? No, I don't think so either. I think she just ran. All right, so depersonalization is a recurrent alteration in self-perception to the extent that your own sense of reality is lost. You feel that your body parts are unreal, that the sensations in your body are weird, and that things are just not right. Your blood chemistries, however, seem to be somewhat abnormal, as are your pet's MRIs and CAT scans. So what does that mean? That probably means we have a physiological predisposition to having this sort of a presentation. That's why it takes me so long to get out of my body, and other people can get out right away. A kid is just home from a summer visit with the relatives and remembers beatings at the hands of a polysubstance abused father. He just barely held it together, and he spent most of the weekend sitting in his room feeling like he was on another planet with rocket ships propelling the feeling inside of his body. So what has he done? He's converted a terrible experience with his father where he was made to go away from the safety of his home. He has weird sensations in his body. He doesn't feel like he's real. It wasn't sexual abuse, but there certainly wasn't the loving sort of experience, and he didn't feel like he was quite himself. Can you see that as a fairly normal experience going along with an abnormal sort of a presentation of the life around you? Sue just had her hair colored and is becoming disturbed about her face in the mirror. She says she doesn't look like herself, and she feels more and more every day that she's in some sort of fog. She thinks she may be stressed but is unsure. Okay? Another episode of depersonalization. You look at the mirror and you say, who is that in the mirror? This will happen to you as you get older. You look in the mirror and you go, who on earth is that? That's not anyone I recognize. Bob gets lost on his way home from work. He felt like he was in a place that was only vaguely familiar, and he didn't feel like he was himself. He describes this and says he's just not himself. Ever have a feeling like that? Don't want to admit it, huh? Okay. Then we have dissociative amnesia, which begins suddenly, and the patient is aware of their memory lost. I just can't remember. This is even beyond Lifetime television for women. This is the stuff of soap operas. There's always somebody who's fooling around with 10 people on a soap opera and suddenly doesn't remember who he is or who she is, and they just can't remember it. It's fairly common. Amnesia is around some traumatic events, and it's here, by definition, the inability to recall important personal information, often after stress. There's usually depression and anxiety that's comorbid. Your physical assessment is normal. This is a normal sort of a occurrence after you get a concussion. And this eventually will gradually subside. So we have depersonalization, and then we have an amnesia sort of an episode. There is a sudden identity experience with no ability to recall who you are. And again, this is Jason Bourne. About 60% of people that they've actually been able to study have some sort of a sexual trauma prior to age 18, which is maybe where they learn to do the dissociative sort of a thing, and then it comes up when something else surfaces later on in their life. There's also a secondary gain that goes along with this, some attention and escape from responsibility. The patient was found by his spouse sitting in the car in the driveway. Did not recognize him or the dog or the best friend who he called for assistance. They took him to the emergency room, thought he was having a CVA, but the exam was negative. He just heard from a younger child, he just heard that a kid on the West Coast was on heroin, and he had lost his daughter to this previously. So He had this kind of spaced out dissociative experience because it triggered the stress, and that was the body's response of pushing it out of awareness of being not me. Or a patient was found wandering at seaside, partly dressed and disheveled, with no knowledge of who she is. This is on the news or in the paper every few months. She's on New York TV after a week, and she's seen by her parents, who come to get her, and it turns out that her boyfriend that she thought she was going to marry just left her. So again, dissociation works as a way of coping with overwhelming stress. In this case, she's more than depersonalized. She doesn't remember who, in fact, she is, because being who she is means she has to acknowledge that the boyfriend has left her. Again, unconscious, though, unconscious mechanism of the ego. Fugue is an even better one, and this is what I would say if I were the girl from Georgia. The client travels far from home and takes on a new identity. Now, she wasn't gone long enough to take on the new identity, but they just get on the bus and they run. Sometimes there's alcohol or substances involved in this. There's clear evidence of a secondary gain. She didn't have to get married, but now that she's come to her senses, she does. The travel can be brief or extensive. The patient appears normal and does not necessarily attract attention. I know of people who the husband has gone out for cigarettes and is gone for 5 years, and then he suddenly takes up, and suddenly he's found in the West Coast or in Oregon or something, and he has another family and another whole life, and he doesn't really remember anything about this life. So that's a fugue state. I did have a patient in the hospital a couple of summers ago who wasn't quite sure what had happened, but he felt a little overwhelmed, and he found himself at the airport, and he bought a ticket, and he flew to Omaha, Nebraska. Why you would pick Omaha, I have no idea. And when he got there, he went and he got a room, and about 2 days later, he called up his wife, who was terrified. They had just built a new house, and he said, "I'm not sure what happened, but I'm in Omaha." And she's like, "What?" And he's like, "I don't know. I don't remember anything about it." So they sent him to the partial program to try to figure out what was going on with him. I thought it was cool. Don't you think that's kind of cool? No? Shamika, you don't like that? I thought you would like that. So sudden unexpected travel away from home, confusion about your personal identity, distress and impairment in functioning. Rosemary's husband, Bill, went out to buy milk and didn't return. Efforts to find him through the state and local police were futile. It happened after a major fight at work, after the breakup of an affair with his boss. He apparently went west and moved outside of Seattle, where he worked in a construction job. He'd been a white-collar manager prior to that. He assumed the new name of Rod and took on a new life, though he was always very, very vague about his life in the past. That's a lifetime sort of a thing. And then the dissociative identity disorder is the last in the continuum of this. It was originally called multiples. It's the stuff of movies. The first one that was ever talked about was the movie The Three Faces of Eve. Joanne Woodward starred in that, and it was fairly dramatic. One of her alters was a sex kitten. Another one was kind of stuffy and repressed. And a third one, the Eve personality, which they finally tried to integrate, was actually the normal one. There's a change in behavior that's sudden, dramatic, and shocking. And the patient either has anemia or what's called a co-consciousness. Depending upon the alter that is out or that is present, the other personalities may or may not be aware of that personality. Now, if you really think of this as just different aspects of your own being, then it makes fairly good sense that you might be aware of some of those personalities. But oftentimes, at least in the Sybil case, they come out when the abuse is extreme. And so the ones that are the tough ones usually come out when the abuse is so horrid that nobody could survive it. When they do central nervous system exams, meaning PETs and MRIs and things like that, they find that there are some brain abnormalities that perhaps were created by the original trauma or that are there after a while. This is the most serious of all the dissociations. And to have this DID diagnosis, you have to have at least two discrete personalities, and you have to switch between them. and those personalities are called alters, and each of the alters has its own behavior. It may have its own voice. Sometimes they have different genders, like you might have a boy child and a strong male, a sexual female, an older person, and some childlike personalities as well. At least two of the subpersonalities have to be able to take control and sort of run the show. And then there is an inability to recall information that happens during the time that the other alters are out. So it's kind of like a blackout in substance abuse sort of situations. The alter will only remember what happened to it during the time that that alter is present and doesn't necessarily know what's going on at the time that the other alters are, in fact, present. We believe, obviously, that psychological trauma is the cause of this. And, in fact, the child is confronted with intolerable terror-inducing events at times when the defenses are inadequate to handle that intense anxiety. So the child dissociates that event and the feelings associated with it, and those get split off from the primary personality. And that dissociated part of the personality takes on a life of its own and becomes a subpersonality, and the subpersonality is the only one that is dealing with those specific feelings that go around that specific event. So there may be several occasions where the subpersonalities sort of get into a conflict, and then the personality has to figure out what the heck is going on here to keep the whole person from disintegrating. Each alter has its own memories, its own behaviors, and its own social relationships. And they talk about missing time. I was just missing time. I don't know what happened, but I woke up and it was 3 days later, and I don't know what happened to me during that period of time. Obviously, before this diagnosis is made, these people have often presented to psychiatrists and psychologists, and they've been given all sorts of other labels, maybe anxiety disorder, maybe depression, maybe personality disorder sorts of things. So as I said before, you need somebody who's pretty good at this to try to figure out that it, in fact, is this. A common alter is an insecure child, and there may also be a protector personality to guard against harm, and a persecutor personality that sort of takes on the same personality attributes as the abuser did, so they may all be pieces or alters within that same personality. They have the lost time, they may wake up, or they may find unusual clothing in their closet. They may get people see them on the street and call them by another name, and they're like, what the heck does that mean? And there's a transition between the personalities that can be just, you know, they kind of go like that, or there's a gradual surge into it. Have you ever seen, oftentimes when there's somebody out that says that they have this, they'll put them on Oprah or something like that. Have you ever seen that? And some of them go through these dramatic you know, like they'll go like this, and then, who's talking, and all that kind of stuff.
Have you seen
this? I've seen one person who said that they had it, and I don't know that I bought it. But I have gone to, I'm the workshop queen here, and I've gone to workshops with people who this is what they do, and I've seen video of this that's pretty amazing. Where they almost even change there's a guy, Maldonado, who is a psychiatrist in San Francisco who has a lot of these people, and basically all over the country they send them out there to him, and he always says look for a physiological reason first, but I've seen videos that he shows of 15 or 20 different people that are absolutely astounding. When the child personality is there, they look entirely different from the powerhouse personality, and he's a pretty reputable guy. He's written the textbooks on this stuff, and it's pretty amazing. It's pretty cool.
Personalities are aware of each other?
Sometimes they're aware. Some of them are. The host personality is usually aware of all the other personalities, but then there are alters that they're not aware of. And the job of the therapist, and this guy's a psychiatrist that Barbara and I have both seen him talk, that he works with therapists that's all they do, and they try to do the reintegration. It's the coolest thing. I mean, I just think it's, like, amazing that you think of that as a solution to the horror, you know. But it is a lot of work. But did you read Sybil? But, see, I read it a long time ago, and I just remember, all I remember is enemas, so I think I need to read it over the summer. But that kid was tormented. And I don't know. I didn't have a childhood like that. So I think that's a pretty clever way to to figure it out. The media doesn't like this, and so they have been saying that therapists are trying to stir up a lot of false memory stuff, and there's been a big controversy, at least in the public press, about therapists getting kids or getting adult patients to explain their anxiety by saying they were abused by their fathers and grandfathers and all that kind of stuff, and there's really an ongoing debate. The latest one of these is a lady who is a professor somewhere, and her father was an elder, a famous elder in the Mormon church, and she's just come out with a big expose of what goes on in the Mormon tabernacle and how they're all being abused. And, I mean, I don't know. There are horrible issues of abuse out there, and this is a pretty clever solution to coping with the overwhelming anxiety of these things. Untreated, it's chronic and recurring, and the patients have a lot of problems. Obviously, they'd be very somatic. Obviously, they'd be very anxious, and obviously, they'd be very depressed. So sometimes they've gone from therapist to therapist and situation to situation getting treated for things, but unless you really are looking for this, you're not going to find it. And then, as I keep saying, I don't think we should be treating this. I think if somebody's really got this, they need to go to somebody who deals with this all the time. I think Maldonado always gives them like a truth serum, kind of a pentothal sort of a situation, and he puts them under to see if he can stir up some of the abuse sort of issues, and oftentimes they're able to, one of the alters is able to talk about the abuse that happened that stirred all this stuff up. Okay, so here's a dissociative case. This is from Maldonado. Sue is a 27-year-old professional woman who works at Merck, and she is the primary personality. Sandra is one of her alters. It's a 5-year-old who alternates between anger and baby-like behavior. She dawdles, plays games, and carries a bear, and sucks her thumb and whines a lot. Not a good personality to have out if you're working in a big job at Merck. Janet is an alter that's an artist and spends most of her time painting. When she is dominant, she dresses in a very hippie sort of clothing and is sort of dramatic, spacey, and prone to wild statements. Arlene is also 27 and is quite sexy and provocative, hangs out at bars, and sleeps with 3 different guys, mostly from her favorite bar. She's aware of the others and wishes that she'd go away because she's the one who has the most fun of the group. Sue neither drinks, paints, nor does anything besides work and goes to church functions. She comes to treatment when she finds herself in bed with a man covered with tattoos. She's not sure how she got there, and she's absolutely terrified and is worried that she is crazy. So imagine if some of this stuff is surfacing in your life. She's 27. It's going to turn out that she has a whopping history of sexual abuse. So one of the characters is always pretty sexy. One of them is quite a baby, and one of them is competent and whatever. So we need an MRI, a CAT scan, labs, read those books. The nursing assessment is, this isn't somebody that you should really be taking on. Sometimes they will show up in psych treatment, and we need to wonder if they are factitious or malingering sort of personalities. But generally, if you go back through their history, you'll find out that they've spent a lot of time in the mental health system. The questions are things like, do you have gaps? Do you have lost time? Do strangers call you by other names? Have you found writing that doesn't match yours? Do you have memories from your childhood that your siblings say are not anything like their memories? Obviously, the nursing diagnoses, the goal is to reintegrate the personalities and reduce the anxiety and get them to work through the trauma. There's no evidence that medications really help with this. It needs a, since these things broke the trust versus mistrust component of these human beings, we need to go back and get them back to working through the trust versus mistrust. So warm, supportive therapy. Hypnosis, maybe, to get at some of these things. Sometimes as they're beginning to reintegrate, they'll be suicidal, so we have to watch for the suicide risk. They teach them some techniques like grounding, finding a safe place where they'll feel safe and working these things through. That's the rabbit book, so if you're interested in this. Claire's a 40-year-old woman who was brutally abused by both of her parents, both physically and sexually, from the age of 3 to 16 when she finally ran away from home. She comes into Shoreline in a very dissociated state after a serious overdose of 300 pills. She describes having 6 alters in her admission interview and seems to shift from one personality to another at times during the initial contact. This is the only one I ever encountered. You seem to spend a majority of time with a seven-year-old named Guinevere, who she calls herself Gwen, but she tells you that the host personality is named Sandra. Gwen is frightened and cowers in her room and seems very fragile. She also has a male alter named Billy, who seems about 15, is violent, and has a very foul personality. So what did we do with this girl? We got her to feel a little bit calm, and we sent her to the outpatient program, and I don't know what happened to her. And I don't even know if it was real, but that's how she, in fact, presented. So that's dissociation. Questions on that? Cool stuff. Oh, yeah, they have gender. If you're abused by a guy, you learn what the guy behavior is. If you're a girl and you learn to mimic that, you become a pretty good actress, but you split that off.
But physically,
you male. I mean, they don't grow a penis, no, but they can, you know, they can talk with a low voice. And, again, I've only seen this girl that I'm talking about here. I don't know what happened to her. She said she was a multiple. I don't know, but that's what she said. But in the Maldonado videos, they get very macho, and they kind of he's got them switching in the altars, and they get very male, and they get very like, oh, yeah, you want to fight me now? I mean, you could say that there are also females that behave that way, but if when they switch from the seductive or the little, and then suddenly they're like that, you're like, whoa, get a load of that.
But if you present reality to them, say, you know, I'm looking at a female. And
okay, but that's not... That's why I'm saying we shouldn't be doing that. It needs to be somebody who is... This is 5 or 6 years of therapy that you're going to have to do to work this through. You've got to be rich, I think, to have this happen for you. And a lot of these, you know, these are in university settings where there's research dollars to, like, look at this kind of stuff. This is not something for Shoreline or for Central State. So you wouldn't confront at all. You would get the altar to come out. You would talk to the altar. You would try to get the altar to talk about the first time that they surfaced, and it's usually that they're mimicking some of the behaviors in the horrid experience kind of a thing. I think it's cool. All right, let's take a 5-minute stretch, run around while I figure out what we're going to do next.